This edition of Midori House was first broadcast on the 17th of January 2012 on Monocle 24.
Hello and welcome to the first of two very special editions of Midori House, coming to you live from Zurich with me, Tyler Brulé, and Andrew Tuck.
Coming up on the programme, we'll find out how the Swiss franc is giving the euro a run for its money with Daniel Hoogley, editor-in-chief of the financial website Cash.
And also on the programme, we'll be discussing the business of watches with Michael Sarp, chairman of Armin Strom AG and former CEO of the watch company IWC, and a man on a mission to preserve some classic Swiss companies.
And we'll also be chatting with the owner of the Zurich clothing store Townhouse, Sebastian Vadasch, to get a small business perspective on life in Zurich.
And if that weren't enough from our Swiss buffet, we'll also have resident DJ Olivier Rohrbach playing some classic tunes. All that right here on Midori House, live on Monocle 24. But first, back over to London for the news with Nick Kelly.
Monocle 24 News, I'm Nick Kelly. Italian coast guards pleaded angrily with the captain of a stricken superliner to return to his ship, according to recordings released today as divers found five more bodies in the half-submerged wreck of the Costa Concordia. Captain Francesco Scatino is in jail, blamed by his employer for risking thousands of lives and $500 million of ship in a reckless display of bravado. Italian Navy diver Marco Fapunangelo says it's a dangerous place to carry out a rescue mission.
Even the carpet is floating, so for a diver going in there, you can go in there, and when you see your back, you can see the carpet, so you cannot see where you get into.
Iran said today it was open to discuss any issues in rare talks this month with the UN nuclear watchdog, which wants Tehran to address mounting concerns that it may be trying to develop nuclear weapons capability. With the Islamic State facing intensifying sanctions aimed at its oil exports, a senior Iranian official said a high-level team from the UN International Atomic Energy Agency would hold 3 days of talks in Tehran from January the 29th to the 31st. Around 47 people have been killed in tribal violence in South Sudan, the latest in a cycle of attacks that have displaced some 60,000 people in the new African nation. South Sudan became independent in July under a 2005 peace agreement with Khartoum to end decades of civil war. But the government has been struggling to end tribal and rebel violence, killing at least 3,000 last year. Wikipedia, the popular community-edited online encyclopedia, announced its decision today to black out its English-language site for 24 hours to seek support against proposed US anti-piracy legislation that Wikipedia founder Jimmy Wales said threatens the future of the internet. The US service will be the highest-profile name to join a growing campaign starting at midnight Eastern Time tomorrow that will see it black out its page so that visitors will only see information about the controversial Stop Online Piracy Act and the Protect Intellectual Property Act. Nigeria's graft watchdog has launched an investigation into corruption surrounding government subsidies on imported fuel, which critics say have bled billions of dollars from the treasury into the pockets of fuel importers. The move follows a week of protests after President Goodluck Jonathan's administration tried to axe the popular subsidy to tackle corruption and waste in the sector, but was forced to partially back down by a public outcry. On the streets, people continue their protest.
You can kill the people, but you cannot kill the voice. You cannot kill the spirit. Why don't you listen? We all went out to vote. We cast our votes, and this is the result we are getting.
And finally, European shares hit a 5.5-month high today before closing above a key resistance level, boosted by automobile and mining stocks after Chinese economic data raised hopes the country would further ease its monetary policy to stimulate the economy. Those are the top stories here on Monocle 24.
Merci vielmals for that, Mr. Kelly. And now to Mr. Thomas Schaffernacker with the world weather.
The weather, in association with Kuoni Travel. And let's take a look at Europe. Still a lot of cold, crisp weather around, but midweek some big contrasts across the continent on the way. In the UK and France, milder and wetter. The east of Europe, however, will retain the cold, and heavy snow is expected too. Fresh snow also in the Alps from Thursday, and it looks like it could be snowing there pretty much all weekend, more or less constantly. Here's Wednesday's City Outlook. In London, 12 degrees and rain. In Geneva, 3 and sunny. Berlin, 6 Celsius with clouds in the sky. And Milan, 4 degrees, partly cloudy as well. Over to North America, the eastern states are wet and mild at the moment. Rain from Washington, D.C. to New York City. From Wednesday, the sun should be shining over the Big Apple once again. In the Pacific Northwest of the U.S., all the way from Northern California, Oregon, Washington State, heavy rains, ice, and lots of snow. Seattle already being affected, and there's more on the way right through Wednesday. Air travel could well be affected. So Wednesday's city forecast: Seattle, 0 Celsius, heavy snow. San Francisco, 13 degrees with sunshine. New York City, 2 and sunny. Miami, 25 with sunshine. Now, other world destinations, the next 48 hours. In the Caribbean, Kingston, Jamaica, a chance of some thunder showers, 29 degrees here. In Barbados, it's sunny and 28. And in the Middle East, in Dubai, relatively cool for the next few days. Highs only 22 degrees. In Doha and Qatar, just a little warmer. That's all. I'm meteorologist Thomas Schaffernacker here on Monocle 24.
Thank you for that, Mr. Schaffernacker. You're listening to Midori House live here on Monocle 24. We're back after this.
Vous écoutez Monocle 24.
This is Monocle 24.
Dette Monocle 24.
Esse Monocle 24.
Das ist Monocle 24.
And a Monocle 24 highlight, yeah.
This is Monocle 24.
This is Monocle 24.
Monocle 24 ei oikeassa.
Tämä on Monocle 24.
The Propojalava.
Monocle 24.
This is Monocle 24.
This is Monocle 24.
You're listening to Monocle 24.
This is Monocle 24.
And you are back with Midori House with me, Tyler Brulé, and Andrew Tuck. It's just coming up to 7 minutes past 1900 here in Zurich. That'd be 1800 in London, Andrew. Did you know that? Did you notice the time change this afternoon?
I did notice the time change. I was on the plane when I noticed it. When I was just landing, they told me to change my time.
It's appropriate that we have such big clocks in the studio that we're in Switzerland, isn't it?
It's the biggest clock I've ever seen, I think.
Maybe not quite, actually.
Well, apart from Big Ben, that is. But no, it's quite big.
We're going to be here for the next 2 days. We've got a variety of things that we're going to be doing. We have a gentleman who's going to be with us today. We might even have him back tomorrow to play some more music, but we'll come to Mr. Olivier Rohrbach in a second. But nice to have you back in Zurich.
Yes, I can't claim to have seen much so far. I've been here about 2 hours. Yeah. But I'm looking forward to having a couple of days here.
But you have, I think, just in the interest of all listeners, you have been here before.
I've been here many, many, many times.
Bit of trivia as well. The headquarters of our company are here. A lot of people think it's London, but the actual headquarters.
I know.
Is
and
Zurich.
In fact, last time I was here, I was working in our very nice offices.
I know. We'll be there tomorrow, and we'll be there the day after, and the day after, and the day after.
No, I love going to Zurich, and I'm hoping you're going to take me for dinner later as well.
I'm taking you to dinner. I think that Kronenhall has got your. They're all the fish. I think they're pulling out of the lake right now, in fact, for you. Now, Andrew, do you remember the gentleman who's sitting beside me, Mr. Rohrbach? Do you know a bit of the history?
Well, I don't know all of your history.
Well, actually, we do have quite a big history. About 10 years ago, it was 10 years ago, literally almost this week, Olivier, that we started on a venture. This was, of course, after Swissair went bankrupt and the resurrection of the new brand Swiss. And, of course, every good airline needs a good soundtrack. And so we collaborated with Olivier Rohrbach on when we gave you a very tight brief as well. We said that we had to have, of course, a mix of not just, you know, any CD, so you could have English. We wanted to have also, had to have Romanche, had to have Italian, had to have French, had to have German. And he delivered an incredible volume that we ended up selling.
Well, I was just going to say, luckily, I was at that launch, so I do have a copy of that CD still in my house.
Hold on to it. There were a lot of money. Do you still have a few of them, Olivier?
Yes, I have maybe 10 copies left.
Okay.
And that's it.
I was not quite cleaning up my office the other day, but I was having a bit of a tidy up, and I found it the other day. And there was that wonderful song that you found by, was it Michel van der Heide?
Voilà la nuit,
which is very nice. I hadn't played that forever, and it was great. But I guess for those of our listeners who may not be familiar with you, you've become a bit of a spatial and mood engineer, because of course it started with music, aside from also being a journalist as well. But you've also moved into fragrance now.
Yes, since
5 years we have started with Calming Park to create a line of scented candles.
Calming Park was, of course, the musical enterprise that then moved into fragrance.
Exactement. And that was 4 years ago. And since then, we have been very successful and we distributed in 30 point of sale in the world right now.
It was unique. And it's kind of curious because you would have thought that there would have been other, you know, franchises that would have evolved because, you know, so much, you know, I'm distilling it by calling it mood music, but I mean, having just sort of wonderful musical compilations, it was obvious to you that you needed a scent to go with it. Was that the idea?
Actually, I wanted to start with the scent, that I had the possibility to start with the music, and so after I came with the idea to have the scent.
Okay. Well, maybe we should kick things off and get it moving here on a Tuesday evening in Zurich. What are you going to play for us first?
We're going to play now a song from a very lovely artist called Bebel Gilberto. It's a featuring song on new Miguel Mix album.
Excellent. Let's have a listen.
Well, that was Zuzu by Miguel Mix featuring Bebel Gilberto, and it's been selected by our special in-house Swiss DJ today, Olivier Rohrbach.
You booked your ticket to Rio, I saw that during the song, didn't you?
It's quite good to come to Zurich to get a Brazilian recommendation, I think.
Olivier, this comes from where? This is part of a new project?
This is
We know where the music comes from, but this is something that you're working on now as something new? Yes.
This is a new song that Bebel Gilberto sings with Miguel Mix on Miguel Mix's new album.
And are you using this also on a collaboration with anything? Or?
No, not at the moment.
Okay,
no.
Okay. But because you were saying just before we went on air, you've got some new collaborations that you're doing.
Yeah, I just do a compilation for Four Seasons Maldives. It's a two-CD compilation that reflects the two resorts they have there. And one is very relaxed and one is more up-tempo. And we're going to play some songs out of it.
Okay. I'm wondering if actually hotel groups actually want things which are up-tempo. Because, you know, don't you find sometimes you go into hotel rooms that they're always, you know, limiting the volume on the television, they're always limiting the volume on the stereo, so you can't make things too up tempo sometimes.
We did some compromise.
Now, is this something which is in the minibar that you, if you take it and it sort of falls in your bag, you then get charged for it when you leave the Four Seasons at the Maldives? Is that how it works?
Maybe.
Or is it active purchase? Is it the first time you've done one for a hotel?
It's the second time I've been doing for the Setai in Miami beginning of the year, and now it's the second project for a hotel, and the CD is going to be You will be able to purchase at the resort from next February on.
At a time when everything is downloadable, obviously, do you think that this type of keepsake is still quite important? You know, if you're a hotel group now, this sort of, you know, something that you leave the property with as a bit of a memory, because I think a lot of people say, well, you could just go to the hotel website and download it.
We talk about this, but we think that this is bringing really something you bring back home, like a souvenir. So it's like an object we bring, and it's going to come with in a beautiful digipack packaging with special pictures from El India that are part of the project. So it's a very elaborated project, and we even have done two special remixes of Maldivian songs for the project. So it's quite large and dense.
And Olivia, how many of these hotels think of it as a commercial operation? Obviously, there's the good example of like somewhere like Hotel Cost that made a lot of money, probably more money from their CDs than they did from their hotels some days. Do these hotels just think of it just for their hotel, or do they think of it as something they can sell on and actually become a franchise?
I think every project is so specific, so it's difficult to talk about them in a general scale.
Oh, okay.
Okay, that's it. Well, that's the end of that question.
Exactly.
Put in my place. I'll
absolutely.
Go home now.
And on that note, we should probably go away for a short break. We're just coming up to about 17, almost 18 minutes past the hour here in Zurich. You're listening to Midori House. We're back after this.
Weekends on Monocle 24 are for relaxing, taking stock of the week's events, and keeping an eye on the week ahead. The Review is our hour-long Saturday show, looking back at the books, TV shows, films and events that have made our week, as well as a regular magazine review. Monocle Weekly, our original audio offering, is where it all started. Tyler Brulé, Robert Bound and Andrew Tuck discuss the week ahead with guests, analysis and a good helping of music. Perfect Sunday listening. And if you need a short, concise summary of the week's highlights, look no further than The Curator, in association with Rolex, a one-hour roundup of all the juiciest bits of the past week on Monocle 24. So listen to The Review, Monocle Weekly, and The Curator for the full Monocle 24 weekend experience, either live on Monocle 24, on our timeshift player at monocle.com, or on iTunes.
And you're back with Midori House, and we're live in Zurich with me, Tyler Brulé, and Andrew Tuck. Andrew, I just wanted to ask you, are you probably sort of end of last year, were you trying to renegotiate your salary from pounds into Swiss francs?
Well, I wish I had. No, it's been an amazing story watching the Swiss currency. You know, it's great, obviously, being a reserve currency, but you look at Switzerland, you look at other countries where people run to at these times, and you do realise that it has some kind of problems as well when you begin to lose control over what happens to your economy.
Well, and also at a time when we've got the watch fair down the road in Geneva at the moment, and yet we've seen results coming up from a number of watch companies, and they're talking about yet another sort of bumper year. So, on one side, some Swiss manufacturers, I think certainly sort of being challenged, by a very high franc, and then on others, I think when it comes to certain luxury products and perhaps brands that people really want to put their money behind, they're not sort of perhaps so concerned.
Yeah, extraordinary. Seeing that, and I saw the figures out from Richemont this morning saying that their sales were up 25% last year. And you think then, actually, there's a Swiss product that actually doesn't seem to make any difference what the level is.
If it's your Panerai, if it's your Cartier, no one really matters. We're joined in the studio by Dr. Daniel Hooghly. He's the editor-in-chief of Cash. Some people will remember Cash, of course, as a financial daily in this country. It's now a financial website, and Daniel's in the studio. Welcome.
Welcome.
Just as we're just discussing here right now, if we looked at the manufacturing sector and perhaps people who are maybe in the business of more everyday items other than watches, what's the state been? If you are really sort of out there not making quite commodity items but close to it, how has it been for Swiss manufacturing?
It is the appreciation of a Swiss franc put this country in a state of alert or crisis, because other than many people think, Switzerland is not only a financial center, it has a very large export industry. And this appreciation of a Swiss franc, put the export industry in a crisis, because it makes exports really very expensive abroad, and it diminishes profits, of course.
I mean, have we seen already, because of course, Switzerland not being a naive country, many very famous Swiss brands, but of course have enormous manufacturing operations all over the world. So have we even seen sort of over the last 18 months, over the last year, some factories, shutting down or even moving production elsewhere and scaling back, or even totally shuttering their operations in Switzerland?
There were a lot of announcements concerning these, shutting down factories in Switzerland and moving labor force abroad. But that hasn't happened so far to the extent that the announcement probably were supposing. But if the appreciation of the Swiss franc continues, or it stays at the same level as we see now, I'm very sure that this will happen over the next few years. Mm.
And do you think that for Switzerland to be successful, it has to really play its other card, which is taxation? So you do see actually kind of German companies still wanting to be on this side of the border because the taxation is so much lower and they'd like to see their operations based here. Is that the other card that Switzerland play to kind of counter the problems with its currency?
That's true, because Switzerland, as a tradition, it has the notion of stability, and this also is the reason for the strength of the Swiss franc. For decades, the Swiss franc has ever had a status of a safe haven, and this is also the reason why The reason for this is that there's a stable Swiss government for decades. The government hasn't changed for decades, which is quite boring. But it pays off.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, it actually could be a good national campaign as well. I mean, one certainly sees Zurich promoting itself very heavily on CNN, but, you know, maybe Switzerland reassuringly boring, you know, would be a good national campaign to look for more investment.
Come to Switzerland, it's boring.
Yeah.
So, yeah, why not?
It's interesting, though, when you look at just that very point. I mean, you know, you can see this city, Zurich, you know, really aggressively talking about quality of life and certainly many themes that we talk about in the magazine. Geneva, of course, very competitive as well, you know, looking for corporate headquarters. Is that something which still continues, just picking up on what Andrew says as well, that, you know, because in one way you could almost say, could there be any more kind of companies coming to set up HQs? Because whether it's Google, I mean, there's no shortage of people based here. But is that still a big mission for the various cantons?
Yeah, of course. And it's only a big fight between the cantons to attract these companies, these foreign companies. And this also causes a lot of criticism in Switzerland itself, because there is a huge fight between the cantons. Every canton wants to have lower taxes for these companies. And this is really a bit dangerous, this development here in Switzerland.
Mm. When you look at your site at the moment, I don't have a laptop in front of me, so I can't see what's the front page at the moment. But what would you say are the sort of the key narratives right now when you look at Switzerland Incorporated, and whether it's, you know, looking at the banking sector, whether you're looking at precision manufacturing, and of course, you know, retail, of course, being, you know, a large part of this country. What concerns Swiss industry right now, even aside from a high currency, would you say?
Well, the main thing, the main topic is the strong currency. That's true, and the effects on exports. But we also have this scandal here in Switzerland about the Swiss National Bank. Mm. This dominated the headlines at the beginning of this year, and well, apart from this, it's also probably the layoffs we will see here in Switzerland, because Switzerland is not an island what the economy concerns. We will have layoffs here in Switzerland as well as in countries, in other countries in Europe as well. So Switzerland is not an island. It can't withdraw from the development in Europe.
But going shopping abroad with your Swiss francs, now whether you're a company or an individual looking to invest in property, are we seeing that happening? Are you seeing Swiss people here actually finally buying the big house they wanted in Italy? Are you seeing Swiss companies snapping up other companies that are in distress in Italy or in Greece?
Of course, it's we have three topics you mentioned. Swiss people go shopping to the neighboring cities in Germany, in France, and this is of course a national issue. And here in Switzerland, this is a development which is frowned upon the big retailers here in Switzerland, because
if they had Sunday shopping, it would be fine. But then, you know, then they wouldn't drive across the border to Italy.
That's true, but I mean, retailers here they feel the disadvantage of the strong Swiss franc. We have two big retailing chains in Switzerland. I don't want to mention the name, but
and one begins with M and one begins with C, maybe, right?
That's true. You know Zurich and you know Switzerland. And the second issue is you mentioned Swiss companies probably taking over foreign companies, and you know, in consolidation which takes place in various industries. That's true. We have seen a lot of Swiss companies buying you know, cheaply, with Switzerland having that that good currency, buying cheaply foreign currencies in Germany, in Italy, or even in the US.
Andrew, sorry.
No, I was just going to say that. So there is an opportunity here for Switzerland as well.
Of course.
And it'll be interesting to see the quiet diplomacy of Switzerland going on while we see Germany obviously making the headlines about what the euro crisis. It could be Switzerland that's a big player on the quiet in this then.
It could be, but there's also a negative side on that. The Swiss franc, as I mentioned before, it diminishes the profits. When you have, you know, laboring and manufacturing costs in Switzerland, it gets more and more difficult, you know, to reach the profits they had the years before, the companies.
And just before we go, just last question. On the talent side, it was interesting looking at the Financial Times this morning, you know, big story on page 3, at least in the Continental edition, talking talking about the brain drain that Italy's experiencing because times are, you know, are bad, but also the opportunity that sometimes exists when, of course, the labour market, you know, certainly reshuffles. Is that a problem in Switzerland on the other side, because things are so comfortable, it's so secure, that you know, in many ways, also the labour market becomes a bit boring? And yes, there's a lot of international people here, but I'm wondering what sort of Swiss manufacturers and corporations, you know, are sort of feeling. Everyone would love to make Swiss francs, but on the other side, are enough young Swiss going abroad to get international experience?
That's a good point, but there are actually 2 points I have to respond here. First, I asked exactly this question to the headhunter in an interview a couple of weeks ago. You know, Switzerland is, you know, it's getting boring, and we have a strong Swiss franc. But this headhunter told me that Swiss people, they want to go abroad. It's not about an issue of staying here. They want to, they exactly know they have to collect international experience if you want to appreciate in their jobs.
Mm.
Well, and second is, there is a big competition here in Switzerland in the labour market. Switzerland opened its borders to foreign workers. We have a massive inflow of high qualified German workers and labourers. So it's an open economy, despite the fact that Switzerland is actually not a member of the Eurozone or Europe.
Great. Dr. Daniel Hoogly, Editor-in-Chief of Cash, thanks very much for joining us.
It was a pleasure.
We are going to go away for a very short break. And when we come back, we are going to have a bottom of the hour headlines. Andrew, I'm just wondering, when we hired you, and of course it's an open labour market in the UK, why don't you have a doctor in front of your name?
I know, I feel a bit disappointed.
I think it would be great if you sort of, you know, Andrew Tuck.
Being editor-in-chief of Cash.
Yeah, it's good. It says exactly what it does on the label, which is quite good. We're just coming up to the bottom of the hour here. We're going to cross over back to Mr. Kelly in London with the bottom of the hour headlines.
Thanks very much, Tyler. Italian Coast Guards pleaded angrily with the captain of a stricken superliner to return to his ship, according to recordings released today, as divers found 5 more bodies in the half-submerged wreck of the Costa Concordia. Iran said today it was open to discuss any issues in rare talks this month with the UN nuclear watchdog, which wants Tehran to address mounting concerns that it may be trying to develop nuclear weapons capability. Around 47 people have been killed in tribal violence in South Sudan, the latest in a cycle of attacks that have displaced some 60,000 people in the new African nation. Wikipedia, the popular community-edited online encyclopedia, announced its decision today to black out its English language site for 24 hours. A Jordanian cleric, once described as Osama bin Laden's right-hand man in Europe, won an appeal in the European courts today to stop Britain from deporting him to Jordan to stand trial on terrorism charges. Nigeria's graft watchdog has launched an investigation into corruption surrounding government subsidies on imported fuel, which critics say have bled billions of dollars from the treasury into the pockets of fuel importers. European shares hit a 5.5-month high today before closing above a key resistance level, boosted by automobile and mining stocks after Chinese economic data raised hopes the country would further ease its monetary policy to stimulate growth. And the European Union is expected to launch legal action against Hungary, a sign of serious concern about the government's authoritarian policies. Those are the top stories here on Monocle 24.
Dankeschön, Mr. Oh, sorry, Andrew.
That was my line.
Is that your line? Sorry, I wasn't paying
attention.
I've
flown all the way to Zurich
just
join
to say
you,
that.
And you're stealing my one line.
What were you going to say? Go for it.
I'm going to say it very, very grand now. You're listening to Midori House live from Zurich on Monocle 24 with me, Andrew Tuck, and Tyler Brulé.
And did we thank Nick Kelly, though, did we?
Well, I'm going to thank Nick Kelly. Thank Nick, you did your job very well.
Yeah, it was
thank
very
you very
good.
Much.
it was interesting talking about that whole notion of being a little bit sort of comfortable in a country like this one, where of course you don't have too much to worry about in Switzerland. You know, good infrastructure, good healthcare, everything you need, and that sort of notion of going overseas and perhaps sort of looking for new opportunities. I wanted to ask you, Olivia, just before we go to a song. I mean, your generation, you're very international, but I'm wondering, do you look at some of your contemporaries here and they get suddenly a very cozy life in Kuznacht or somewhere else and they're quite content being in Switzerland?
Yes, because there is probably no many place with this quality of life that we have in Zurich, but this quality has a price probably.
Like what, for example?
Maybe there is sometimes not really as much spontaneously. Maybe the bank effect goes on the people.
Right. So always just going for the safe option. I mean, it is yes. Interesting, Andrew.
It's very structured.
And you'll remember this as well. Like we've had a lot of Swiss interns who really want to work in journalism, and they want to work in magazines, whatever they want to do. But then this, but our family, they really want me to be a lawyer, and they want me to go and work for Credit Suisse or UBS. And
yeah, the bank literally comes a calling. There's a point where they've you've had your fun now for 1 year in London.
Yeah.
Get back. UBS, it wants you.
Now, you're going to take us moonwalking right now. And this is something by a late night alumni. This comes off of one of your new projects?
Yes, that's the new Four Seasons Maldives projects. And it's actually the overture track.
And that was Late Night Alumni Moonwalking. Very nice, Olivier. I like that very much.
Thank you, Tyler.
We are going to come back to you a little bit later in the program. But Andrew, as you were talking earlier, it's been interesting looking at the results. We have, I believe, our Ivan Carvalho is on his way to Geneva right now to report from the Watch Fair. So I think probably in our luxury segment on Friday with Sagra on the briefing, we'll probably be talking about it then. But it's interesting, sort of this market right now. Everyone sort of looks at watches, and being in Milan this week, another brand well known for being Swiss. Certainly a lot of changes of regimes. But Bally is sort of for a moment sort of look very American. Now they're really sort of trying to sort of push their Swissness. I'm wondering, and aside from sort of working on the editorial floor, does Switzerland still stand for equality for you when you?
Completely. I think that it's one of those parts of the DNA of brand Switzerland that I think you'd have to do a lot to completely mess up. Mm-hmm. And I think it's technical, it's precision, it's about making products that people think are going to last for a long time. So yeah, I think even Bally is not seen as when it's at its best, it's not kind of disposable, it's not throwaway.
No. Well, I thought to broaden out this discussion, we are joined by Mr. Michael Sarp, who, in a former life, you were with the company IWC, and are now, and one of the reasons we were very interested is that you have a company which is a Nordic International Holding AG, which has, I guess, in many ways, I'm not sure if it's sort of just a business opportunity or also a point of pride as well, of also looking for some of those targets that exist within the Swiss market that you want to revive. Zimmerli being one of them, definitely a favorite company. I think one of the best underwear brands, certainly in the world. And then also with Horgan Glarus as well, the furniture maker. Maybe just tell us a little bit about Made in Switzerland, because I think a lot of people sort of think, yes, made in Switzerland, great, but do people even believe where things are made anymore?
For me, the made in Switzerland is very important, and I'm acquiring companies that are producing in Switzerland, and we have opportunities. We could go, let's say you talked about Simile, we could go and produce the product in Vietnam, keep the brand name, and make five times the profit.
And most private equity would say that's the business model, that's what you're supposed to do.
Yeah, but we are not a private equity company.
And on that point, though, why, when you could, of course, have much bigger margins and you could go and make your underwear in Vietnam, what is, and then certainly when, of course, when we were talking to the editor-in-chief of Cash earlier, when you have high labor costs, we're sitting in the heart of Europe, what is still the attraction, particularly from a margin point of view?
You have to look at the shareholders of the company. This is a very young generation. They are at the end of 30s, beginning of 40s. And I had to develop the product of manufacture and the concept of manufacturing. And the idea is that we have companies that are based in niche markets where we're not affected so hardly when we have a difficulty with the Swiss franc because we achieve certain prices. And the idea we have in our concept is that the shareholders, and there are three of them, three brothers, they will give everything we are building now, give the whole to the next generation. Mm. We're not buying and selling, so we are not private equity, as I said before, and we are not a finance investor. In other words, we can look at let's say, periods of 5 years. Our managers are paid in their bonus on the basis of 5 years' results.
Hmm. And can I ask you, Michael, when you have a brand like Zimmerli and you are selling it around the world, do you push the Swissness? You know, do you make sure that on the packaging we see a little Swiss flag? Do you make the made in Switzerland a part of the way that you sell these products?
Yes, we do. We are proud that we have the basis of the production in Switzerland. And there are two countries in Europe which are really favored internationally by its origin, and this is Germany and Switzerland. And you will find it on all our products.
Don't you think your friends south of the border would have an issue with that, your friends in Italy?
They would I don't think so, because they are more for fashion, we are for solid manufacturing.
Mm. Just, you know, going back to also just, you know, the watch industry, you are on the board of Armin Strong AG. You know, right now, it's, you know, there's a conflict. We were talking, we won't mention one of the other Swiss companies, which likes to use its name on its textile label, but they put Switzerland underneath it. I'm wondering whether you think there also needs to be a re-education on the part of consumers in terms of what it means. Now, maybe, of course, a premium customer, you know, fully understands that, but also bringing up a next generation as well who may not have grown up sort of in the 70s and 80s when, you know, when Switzerland perhaps even meant more in terms of that this type of precision.
I think what it needs is a real good law which defends the origin like Switzerland. Mm. So the Swiss government has not been able to establish this yet. And then I think we have to promote the Swissness. Wherever we export the product, we have to train the sales staff of the department stores and tell them that we produce a product where people are in the manufacturing that are very emotional. And they know the owners, they know that the company should exist also in 100 years. All our companies are more than 100 years old, and we hope they will exist another 100 years, and therefore we don't want to move production places around the world.
Michael, we were just having the conversation earlier with Daniel about the problems faced by Switzerland and the problems of cost and of getting staff. And also there was an interesting report out this week saying that the Swiss watch industry, for example, they're very short of actually enough people to make watches because it takes so long to train people up. And they're dependent on now people crossing the borders, coming from other countries, recruiting more widely. Do you find it actually difficult just getting the people to make your products?
In the watch industry, definitely. And also, let's say, in Switzerland, where we in the Tessin area, where we produced Zimmerli, we have to train the people and we just can't increase the production overnight. That's why we are always, with all our companies, we are limited in the quantities and therefore we can also achieve a certain price.
Mm. Is there a bit of a generational change also? The companies that you have acquired, that you're looking at acquiring as well, potentially. That, of course, we saw in Italy that, you know, a number of families after generations they move out of the business. So, are we in a cycle also in Switzerland right now, where there are a number of interesting targets within the realm that you're talking about?
When I started with my concept, I had in mind that I would approach owners who are more than 60 years old. And then I had to learn over the years that I could also talk to owners who are 50 years old and could stay in the company for another 10 years, be the patron, and develop the company together with us further.
Mm.
And therefore, I'm talking to owners who are younger than my originally anticipated 65 years old.
Just Andrew, just you know, on that point, I mean, we're always talking about provenance, etc., and it's just interesting, you know, listening to Michael talk about it, and maybe, you know, that the Germans can stake this claim, and that the Swiss are able to stake this claim as well. Do you think that just plays to certain corners of the world, though? It's not just about necessarily sort of the age demographic, or certainly where people sit on the socioeconomic scale, but does it also sort of play to certain pockets of the world.
Well, I think what's interesting is for some countries, especially European countries, it is hard to sell on their national brand, but not for Switzerland. I think if you spoke to somebody in Beijing, or if you spoke to someone in Tokyo, or if you spoke to someone in Sao Paulo, they would know what Switzerland represented for them, and it would be a benchmark of quality and a benchmark of great engineering and great design. So I think that Switzerland is uniquely placed in that sense. I think that anything that comes, from Switzerland, people have an expectation it's going to be good. But you're right, we've seen companies here, we've met companies who use Switzerland on their labelling, and that the things are actually made, are made in Bangladesh. And we did have a conversation with a company who makes something that's branded Switzerland, but they were even saying that Bangladesh was too expensive for them, and they were thinking, even how cheap would they go? And then, you're right, you have to protect that.
There must be a reason that those companies who do not produce in Switzerland try to convince the consumer it's a Swiss product.
Mm.
There is something.
Give us the clue.
Switzerland, we heard this before, stands for quality, for good quality, solid, and they are trying to use all these positive things for their brand, which are produced perhaps in Bangladesh.
And just before we go, I wanted to ask, and not to necessarily only focus on underwear, but when a pair of briefs cost roughly $100, I think for a standard pair of briefs, am I right? About roughly, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And
what brand are you wearing?
Oh, I'm wearing Zimmerli, of course.
Oh, okay. Good.
But I was trying to do the conversion, because I tend to buy mine at Lam and Samaritz. I think they've also got them from sort of many different owners. I think they've got like a whole basement full of them. But anyway, I think they're sort of roughly around $100. But on that point, going back to what I was asking Andrew, are there certain parts of the world, like whether it's is it a Japan, is it somewhere else that also understands that price point, and is it a harder conversation to have in the UK? When you're talking about this product?
No, we're only talking to certain distribution channels, and they would know what the product stands for.
Mm.
And we are not in the price discussion. We don't have rebates. We don't have any year-end bonuses. We have a price, and that's it. And once you wear Zimmerli, and obviously that happened to you, you get... You get infected,
Well, hopefully not infected. Maybe just infatuated with them. Yeah. Anyway, long may they ride, but not ride up. Michael Sarp from the Nordic International Holdings, thanks. Fascinating discussion. You're listening to Midori House here on Monocle 24. We're back right after this.
For listeners in Tokyo or visitors to Japan, you can now enjoy a coffee, a Wilkinson dry ginger ale, or our classic curry at our first ever Monocle Cafe and Shop at the new Hankyu Men's Department Store, just steps from Ginza and the lobby of the Peninsula. Featuring a Monocle shop stocked with our ever-expanding collection of special collaborations, the Monocle Cafe is the perfect place to refuel after a run round the Imperial Palace or a busy day in Marunouchi. For more details, visit monocle.com.
The February issue of Monocle has a warm glow as we look at how charm adds longevity to brands, makes offices great places to work, and keeps people returning to the same restaurants year after year. But there's more.
In the culture section, our man in Tokyo, Kenji Hall, wandered around the corner to Daikanyama's hottest new retail experience, Tsutaya. I jumped on the Eurostar to visit Air, making their new album, La Voyage dans la Lune, and there's four cracking album reviews, more of which you can hear on Monocle 24.
Plus, there's our Japan travel survey, a visit to a jail-turned-craft school in Charleston, a neighbourhood to call home in Stockholm, and a rugged tale from Tehran. The February issue of Monocle is on newsstands now or available via subscription at monocle.com. Monocle, keeping an eye and an ear on the world.
And you're back with Midori House here in Zurich, where it's just 19:48 Swiss time, 18:48 here in London, with me, Tyler Brulé, and Andrew Tuck. Guess what we're doing now, Andrew?
We're going shopping.
We are going shopping.
Well, not actually leaving the studio to go shopping.
No.
But we've already allowed the audience into your pants, as it were.
I know. Well, there's a bit of a pants theme, because our next guest also has sort of vaguely been in the underwear business as well, because you might recall, probably 18 months ago now, we had those nice boxer shorts that were made in Appenzell.
I have a pair.
Are you wearing them now?
I like a boxer in bed.
Okay, in bed. But
yes.
Yeah.
Actually, I wear them. I find they ride a little bit with my gait. I prefer them in bed.
It's enough of that. We are joined by Sebastian Vadash of the store Townhouse. But also, Sebastian, welcome. And you also got a new venture here as well.
Yes, thank you for having me here.
No problem.
Yes, we have new ventures. We now, after the boxer shorts, we just opened a new menswear shop, also in Zurich, a month ago.
Andrew and I tried to go on the way, but it was near Kaufleuten, and I thought we'd sort of lose him on the dance floor if we went that way. But we promised to come around tomorrow. But I guess, you know, there's obviously been sort of a bit of a theme that we've been talking about doing business in Switzerland, and you know, the reason we want to chat to you today is, you know, a city which is known for, you know, as Olivia was saying earlier, you know, just, you know, great quality of life, and that's why people come here, and you know, it's safe, and the infrastructure works, et cetera, et cetera. But I'm wondering, as a small entrepreneur, you know, and especially when you've got so many big retail players, and of course you're a niche business, but you've got a lot of very strong players who play on price, who also play on quality as well. And so I'm wondering what it's like when you're operating your own two small shops in the city.
Well, I think it's great. I think right now, when it comes to retail, Zurich is a little bit a slow area. You have, as you said, right, you have the big players, and then you have a lot of these old style boutiques, you know, going already since 20 years. They have their clientele, and they always make like a spot landing that they exactly know what they need to buy. And I think it became a little bit slow and boring over the years. So that's where we saw our opportunity, because we have a lot of people that are well traveled. They know products from all over the world and just couldn't find it here in Switzerland. So that's where we came in.
And what about just actually setting up shop though? Because I think, and you know, one thing that, you know, Andrew and I certainly look at, and we added it to our metrics, Andrew, I guess was probably at this point, was it last year, maybe 2 years ago, when we said just the ease of actually setting up a business as well. And I'm wondering what it's like here. I mean, is the Canton, or Stadt Zurich, you know, quite amenable to then, you know, getting your business license and getting up and running?
I think there are two sides. I think on one hand, they are really kind of, the setup is quite good and people are really nice, so we had no problem. On the other hand, of course, being Switzerland, it's everything is regulated. So for every little, you know, board or thing you need to do, you need to kind of fill in forms and call up people. So there are, I think, two sides, but all in all, I think it's a pretty straightforward process.
I may have a theory about this country, countries with red and white flags. You know, in Japan, they sustain their economy just on gift giving. And it's true. It's exactly as Sebastian said. I mean, here it's just paper. It's paper business, in fact. That's who runs the country because of all the forms you need to sign out.
Can I ask you, when you're in a country like Switzerland, which is obviously seen as by outsiders as a little bit conservative, does it make it sometimes a bit restrictive running a fashion business where you perhaps want to be a bit more creative in what you're trying to sell people and buy? Or is that a misapprehension about Zurich? Does it have an underbelly that's a bit more exciting than people imagine?
Well, I think it depends on the size. I think if you really want to, you know, address the whole Switzerland, you will have this problem with the general, you know, people here in Switzerland. But I think as we really are a niche player, as Tyler said, I think you have enough people here that, you know, are interested enough and also care for this kind of product. So I think we didn't have a problem at all.
And do you think that also being in Switzerland, because of, you know, there are lots of people here obviously who make good salaries, are you free from worrying about kind of price point? Do you just buy the best things that you want to buy? Or do you think, even here in Switzerland, do you have to be kind of careful about the prices you're charging?
I think you need to be careful, but I think this is more like a philosophy. But for us, it's the whole package, right? So also a price point, obviously, is something of importance. But of course, here with the very high price level, I think you have a little bit more space. But we are not interested in, you know, creating the most expensive boxer shorts in the world or something like that.
No.
Well, and Andrew, he's going to talk to you once we're off air as well, so they don't ride up anymore as well. I'm not sure if that means sort of a tighter leg, or maybe they need to be slightly shorter than rise. But you went from Townhouse. Tell us a little bit about the new project, moving in and doing a menswear store. What did you spot in terms of being a gap in the market? I mean, I can certainly think of a few gaps in this market, but what did you see in Zurich?
Well, we saw that you have a lot of this really high street, a little bit more traditional brands, like, for example, Zegna or Hackett, which are here pretty strong. I think Zegna used to be the highest grossing store of, I think, worldwide until years ago, the one in Zurich. And on the other hand, you have now coming up more like this fashionable brands, and we wanted to be something in between. So really kind of nice modern cut, but also, you know, working with staple, with like really the basics. And I think we also, yeah, worked quite a lot about, you know, doing things differently. So if you look at shops, for example, Bahnhofstrasse, they invest so much money, and then at the end, most of them look a little bit the same. So also now, it used to be, our shop used to be a former UBS bank branch. So when we had to, you know, rip out everything, we really fought hard about how can we do things differently. We wanted to create like a manly space. I think we're pretty happy with the outcome.
And imagine just how many forms that would involve. Olivier, I just wanted to ask you as well. I mean, you know, you're not running a retail operation, but I mean, of course, you know, you are wholesaling and running your business. And, you know, let's say with, if it's candles, I mean, you're working in France, et cetera. But as a base to work from, do you find Switzerland, you know, quite easy? Or sometimes you think, look, even the bureaucracy of it in France, sometimes you think, oh, you know, maybe in the Latin world, it's a little bit easier.
No, I think it's quite convenient to be here, and it's very good located across Europe.
And just, I know that you're going to line up a song just before we go, but I just want to go back very quickly, Sebastian, before we leave. When you sort of look at state of the market, and I was having a little bit of, you know, fun earlier when I was poking, making reference to the lack of Sunday shopping. I mean, would you like to see a little bit more deregulation in this country?
Yes, of course. And I think this is also, hopefully, it's just a matter of time. I think the demand is here, and now it's just a political process.
Well, I was living here 10 years ago. Listen, I'll tell you, I think everyone is still waiting. We're going to have to leave it there, but Sebastian Vadish from Townhouse, it was great to see you. Thank you very much. Olivier, what are you you're going to play for us in a moment?
It's going to be Claire Came, which is a French actress. Song is called C'était mieux avant, and it reflects my love for French chanson.
Excellent. Well, we'll come to that in a moment. Andrew, we're back tomorrow. It's not just one day in Zurich.
In the same studio, and we're talking military matters.
Not only military matters, though. It's not just going to be people in uniform for the whole program. Anyway, today's show is produced by Katie Bilbao. Our show is researched by Fernando Augusto Pacheco, very Swiss name, and also Tom Hall. And the gentleman driving the desk through the glass has been Tom Vegger here at Tone Studios Z here in Zurich. In 3 hours' time, the Monocle Daily is going to be here at 2200 London time. And as I said, we're back tomorrow with another special edition tomorrow. It's going to be architecture, urban planning, and also lovely Hugo McDonald. He's going to have a little report from Cologne, because he's back from Cologne. But as we were saying earlier, a big thank you to Olivier Robach. Here is C'était mieux avant.